Hello, Paul. It's Vinnie Eastwood here.
Oh, g'day. How are you going?
Somewhat fabulous. What about yourself, mate?
Oh, dear. Oh, not too bad. Just a couple of basic things. First, it really is pretty basic. So I'm just trying to get a picture of sort of the lay of the land here in terms of what I've learned to call truth-seeking or any of its other names. So, look, obviously, you're a good part of that. Tell me about your show. How did that start?
Well, I started doing activism in 2008 when I was the number one salesperson for a company, and then I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company, and then they gave me 6 weeks pay to leave in 5 minutes,
right,
and not tell anybody who I was working for. So that kind of destroyed my ability to work. I had panic attacks when I go to job interviews and things like that. But what I could do is I could go around to protests, public meetings. I'm good at public speaking and everything like that. I don't have a problem with that. And so after about 2 years of filming that kind of thing and putting that up on YouTube, I got noticed by an American producer who then brought me on as a co-host for the American Freedom Report on American Freedom Radio, based in Austin, Texas, at that time in 2009. And in early 2010, they fired the host of the show and gave it to me.
Okay. That's a great outcome for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on air live for about 5-6 years.
Yeah.
The average person that lasts in talk radio about 3 months.
Yeah.
It's actually got a higher dropout rate than the Navy SEALs US talk radio does. So,
okay. But hey, how much, like, do you do it weekly? Or is it sort of, what's the frequency and duration of your broadcasts?
I'm doing 2 shows a week at the moment because I've had to take a significant amount of time off to work on a lot of video production and a lot of web-based and social media stuff because I'm sort of doing it on my own, but also working on a documentary. But 2 days a week at the moment, used to be 5 days a week. In terms of the hours, it takes about 2 hours to do a show, and we do them on Monday and Tuesdays in the United States in the evenings, which live time here in New Zealand is the Tuesday and Wednesday afternoons.
How old are you, Vinny? Do you mind if I just give a couple of basics?
Born in 1984, year of Orwell's novel.
Great year for it, yep. And what kind of area were you working in before this? Obviously, you can't say who those employers were, but were you like...
Telesales and...
Are you in sales? Okay.
And telecommunications, telemarketing and that kind of thing.
All right. And how do you feel like other people are starting to... And Jonathan Eisen told me to say hi, by the way. People, for obvious reasons, reject the conspiracy theory label now. How do you describe the kind of area you're interested in?
Well, I actually do consider it to be conspiracy theory, but the thing about our world is that it's basically, if you had to define it in a sentence, everything is the opposite of what you think it is, to a large degree. So if you think it's a conspiracy theory, it's actually a fact. If you think it's a fact, it's actually just some made-up nonsense. So, for instance, if you were to be listening to the Ministry of Health about what's good for your health, and then you look at the statistics of what's the leading cause of death in New Zealand, and you have a look at the amount of side effects that come out of vaccines and medical drugs, that's winds up the Ministry of Health being the leading cause of death in New Zealand, and they're the people who are actually supposed to be keeping us alive. Now, that sounds really funny and cosmic and ironic, and so what conspiracy theories really are is an acceptance of the cosmic irony and how it works with everything. You know? So, look, Prime Minister comes in and he says, hey, look, everybody, I'm going to save you from this really terrible 2008 financial crisis. Everybody elects him. And then it turns out that the 2008 financial crisis, according to Money Magazine, was caused by derivatives. What was our Prime Minister's previous line of employment? By chance, was it the head of the European bond and derivatives trade for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in 2001 and 2? You know, before that kind of thing gets you on a deep level. And indeed, Radio Live shared... sorry, I'm talking over you. Go ahead, bro.
Oh, no, it's all right. No, honestly. You do it for a living. Was there something, you know, a time or an event, something you learnt that got you interested in the whole area, something that triggered the interest? that you can recall, or that it's just gradual?
It was in the year 2004,
yeah,
which I've come to know as the year fucksake 04, or 04 fucksake. Because in that year, I was introduced to a couple of things. The first thing I was introduced to was the comedy of Bill Hicks, and I was introduced to the usage of cannabis, and I was introduced to conspiracy theories. The first thing I watched was, what was it, Fahrenheit 9/11 by Michael Moore, and then my friend showed me a documentary called The Truth and Lies of 9/11 by the late Michael Rupert, who used to be a member of the Justice Department. Talking about drug money laundering and the involvement of the Bush Crime Syndicate in the pulling off of 9/11. And that kind of really shook me up a bit, but I didn't change my life any until I got arrested for selling cannabis, and the cop said, oh, if you tell us the truth, we'll go easy on you and all of that. And I go, oh, okay, well, I've been a drug dealer for about 6 months, and I've been selling about an ounce a week for about $20 a tinny and that kind of thing. So they go, oh, okay, yep, cheers, no worries, no worries. And then they go to the judge, this guy sold $40,000 worth of cannabis, and we recommend he should be going to jail for up to 8 years because we caught him with 13 grams rolled up in tinnies for supply. Yeah. Right. And so at that point, I realized that the people who are there to protect you, because I was really naive at the time, that I thought that cops were honest and that the people in positions of authority are there to help you and protect you. And I found out that it's actually the exact opposite. Well, the people in authorities tend to be there to hurt you, suppress you and use you and destroy you. Yeah. And that's what happened to me. And that's what I felt, this great sense of grief and loss, because I felt like the government and the authorities were like a family to me, you know. I'd always been looked up to them and felt that there always had to be somebody in a position of authority that was right, and people who wouldn't abuse their power if you gave them the ability to be benevolent. But it was just a big lie that I had to wake up to.
So what happened what was the outcome of the case? What kind of sentence did you end up with?
In Dunedin, when you get busted with 13 grams of cannabis, it's basically treated as seriously as manslaughter. So the guy in front of me was there because he took a jar of Craig's Jam from the local BP, and he was ordered by the judge to repay the $4.15 for the jar of Craig's Jam to BP after they hired a $400 an hour lawyer to prosecute him for it. and the guy after him, who was just before me, was there for sexual assault, resisting arrest, and growing 5 cannabis plants. And this wasn't his first time in the court system either. And he got 150 hours community service. And I go up, 13 grams of cannabis rolled up in tinnies for sale. First offence, no diversion, and 300 hours community service. So I had to spend about a year in 2005 working off that community service, working in the vineyards. Then I went to university and went into sales from there, and you know the rest of the story. Because I just thought that university wasn't teaching me critical thinking. It was just being critical of me because I could think.
What about, because obviously this story's been prompted by David Icke's visit, there seems to be sort of a range of opinion within the community, you know, the truth-seeking community, or conspiracy, about his more extreme theories, but at the same time, people are seeing that his general thing, and the one that was in the clip that I saw with you about the elite, that's actually sort of filtering through a bit. How do you think the whole lizard people, Saturn, hollow moon thing, do you think it helps or hinders, you know, acceptance of his ideas?
I don't know. I'm not sure if David Icke really gives two flying fucks whether or not people accept his ideas. And I think that's self-evident, don't you?
All right.
So here's the thing. If you are wanting the truth to get out there, and let's say you've got people who are teetering on the edge of the truth, they don't think that there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery that have existed for the last couple of hundred years that have been working behind the scenes with stolen reserves of money to bribe off politicians and pass successive pieces of legislation down through the generations so that eventually they can come up with an all-powerful global superstate that they can control and their families till the end of time with no freedom for anybody except them and no laws for them except everybody else. Now, it's some people won't, you know, just come to accept that all of a sudden, you know. especially if you have nothing that's really irked you about your current society. If you're real comfortable right now, if you've been raised in a well-to-do society, you haven't been a young man that has grown up without his dad, which statistically makes you 7 times more likely to get a criminal conviction in your life.
Yeah.
If you haven't been diagnosed with a mental illness and then start getting drugged on earlier in your life, which shows to have an enormous amount of dependency issues and personality disorders assigning onto that. If you haven't been sitting there in front of the TV and having that raise you instead of having creative parents who are moral and ethical, if you haven't had a large quantity of role models in your life to give you positive influence about how you can fit in the world without trying to fit in, but about making your own space to fit in. If you don't have any of those really positive influences, waking up to the truth and how dark it is won't be very appealing to you because you won't actually care. Now, getting people to care is about making it personal to them.
Yep.
If you start attacking people's ideas, let's say somebody believes in the National Party, and they will believe in it, even though I could show them textbooks long of references, videos from mainstream media, and financial records and everything that can prove that he's actually not only a bad person, but a criminal psychopath who has absolutely no conscience and would kill you as look at you if he could get away with it, right? Now, they would still support him nonetheless, because that reality is contrary to the current belief system. You can't convince people to abandon the current belief system willy-nilly. They need time to be eased into it. If you say one thing to one person at one time, they'll tell you to fuck off. But if you're the 7th person to say the exact same thing to them, after 7 different other people at different points in their life have said it to them, they will click. Most likely.
Right.
Statistically, it's called the 7th man. Now, if you just tell the truth, no matter how crazy it sounds, no matter how hard it is to believe, you can't unhear it. That's David Icke's philosophy.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether or not people refuse to believe in the reptilians or the Saturn or the hollow moon or the fractal antenna DNA theory. It doesn't matter to him because he thinks that it's just very interesting. And he puts it into what I've called the possibility box. We've got certainty, we've got things that are certainly not true, and all the rest that we can't really prove one way or the other is in the possibility box.
Sure.
There is no black and white. There's a huge spectrum with black and white at either right. end, and there's rainbow colours in beneath.
That's a good way to sum it up.
Yeah. It's two-dimensional thinking that has led us to this point of confusion. Is this person crazy or is this person smart? I think
right.
that some of the smartest people are also the craziest.
Maybe. Hey, look, so following on from that, do you think there's anywhere that has an honest government?
No.
No, okay, yeah, that's a good answer to that question. And actually, my last question, because I'm really kind of disappointed this story is going to be so as short as it's going to be, because it could be a lot longer, and that would be more fun to write. So over your years of thinking about things, you noticed anything's going on that are unique to New Zealand or the local versions of sort of things that happen internationally that are different here?
No, actually, the reason why I'm so popular with the international audience, as well as really popular in New Zealand...
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
...is because I was taught by Vapi Kupinga from Radio Wātea. She was a great mentor to me when she let me on her show. She died in 2012, I think.
Okay.
And she was the first person to let me on her radio show, just like in the studio and that kind of thing. I just really had the gift of the gab kind of thing for it.
Yeah.
And the reason why... her show, even though she only did it one night a week, on a Thursday night at 9:30 on Radio Wātea, urban Māori radio, and she had higher ratings and a higher listenership per minute of radio than Willie and JT on Radio Live or any other radio host in the country. The reason she was able to do that is because she was able to take all these big disparate issues, whether it be climate change, health, etc., and relate it to Māori. And the lesson that really taught me is to take all these New Zealand issues and relate it to Americans, because Americans are dealing with the exact same issues we're dealing with here, and vice versa.
Right.
Like, for example, right now there's a big fluoride thing going on in New Zealand where local district councils will be having the ability to decide whether or not we have fluoride in the water taken out of their hands and given into the hands of the district health boards, which are more or less in the pocket of the Ministry of Health, which are more or less in the pocket of the big pharmaceutical industry, which are more or less in the pocket of the phosphate fertilizer industry, which make all the fluoride. So that's just not going to happen. I'm not happy with that.
Which was the industry after the pharmaceutical industry? The
phosphate fertilizer industry. That's how they get it all. They crush all the rocks and then they pour sulfuric acid all over it, and then it's too toxic to come up into the air, so they banned doing that in about early 1900s or whatever. That's how long this stuff's been around. And they can't dump it into the rivers. They tried doing that, doing it down so that the fish wouldn't die immediately, but a lot of people spoke out against it. So essentially, when you're making fertilizer of that much of a quantity that you can see the slurry pits in Florida from fucking space, you have a shitload of that chemical that is incredibly expensive to get rid of.
Right.
But conveniently, because of a council bylaw and because of a vagary in commercial trading, let's say you're a dentist and you need to buy a toxic chemical that you need to use during the practice of dentistry. Perfectly fine, right? You don't want that to be hazardous waste as it's being transported around, because he's a professional, he knows how to handle it, and you don't need to have a fucking hazmat trucks and big buddy whirling signs, and you don't need to have it buried 10 miles underground in order for him to fucking use it in your mouth, do you? So that's the reason that law is there. However, it works this way with fluoride. We've got an incredibly expensive toxic waste to get rid of. What does this toxic waste do? Well, it causes cancer and about 115 other fucking diseases that basically kill anything organic that it comes into contact with. Oh, okay. Well, how can we dump this into the environment without it actually killing everything? Well, we need a filtering process, basically. What if we just put it in the drinking water and filter it through human kidneys? And that way all the fluoride will accumulate in people's bones and give them brittle bone syndrome, and they'll accumulate all the diseases, and there won't be quite as much of this shit being dumped directly into the environment, apart from the 99% of water that runs down the fucking drain.
Well, that makes sense. Hey, look, that's brilliant. I am actually, I'm going to have to leave it there just on grounds of space, unfortunately, but it's a really helpful sort of angle to have in the story and make it clearer to people sort of what's going on here. So thank you for that, and well done on keeping that show going. That's brilliant. It's not an easy thing to do.
It actually is easy when you don't have a choice.
I mean, a lot of people would like to be doing it who just couldn't do it, so that's credit to you.
Yeah. Well, if people are willing to sacrifice 5-6 years of their life doing stuff voluntarily for no pay just so that they can get enough donations to barely scrape by, then they'll have it. But most people aren't willing to make that kind of sacrifice. They don't have a calling. All right, mate.
Right.
Cheers, Paul. Thanks, mate. Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot. See ya.